but Addy, you spud and I'm Addy. Just listen, you'll glisten, cause you'll be so happy. Our podcast is random talk on this and on that. But what did you expect from potatoes and fat? Yeah, what did you expect from potatoes and fat?
Well, good evening, everybody. My name is Spud, and...
No, you're Addy.
I just wanted to see if you'd say, and my name is Addy. I just wanted to see.
No, I'm too clever. I'm genius. I'm Spud. Oh, he's Addy.
I'm going to get you to do it at some point. You know, I'll get you to say something silly. Maybe I won't. You are quite clever.
Spud is quite clever.
Spud is one of those people. I'm just going to embarrass you
in front okay, go of on.
The whole world. Spud is one of those people who is very, very... I'm not sure what the word is, but like smart, but not like you school wasn't like massively your thing, was it? Like you struggled nah. at school, but you're a smart guy, you know?
Okay.
I'm not sure. How would you describe your intelligence? Cause I'm like stupid. Cause like we've got a friend called Gwigsy who I've done some games with. His knowledge is just incredible. Like, I mean, I do like quizzes occasionally with him and. I mean, I'm on the team with him, but basically he wins it just by being existing. His knowledge is incredible. But, like, you know, then you ask him, you know, where his arse is, and he's not sure. What about you?
I don't know. Life experiences have shaped my mind to a vast maze of complications.
So you're like, Are you just trying to show off to the chat that you're an experienced guy?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Experienced. Yeah. No, at school, I didn't realise all the important things in life until it was too late. And I was like, damn. But now I love learning. Learning's cool. And I like learning new stuff and talking about
it. You were writing a book at one point. You should do that?
Yeah, I'm about... quarter of the way in where I was about 2 years ago.
Ooh, well, so hang on. So you had a birthday recently. So as long as you don't die before you're 40, you should finish your book.
I should do. Well, it stopped as exactly the same time I had my youngest now, because babies are hard work, man.
Mm.
So they love you, and then you can't like throw them away because apparently people frown upon that. So you
I'm
have
sure
to.
Your
like,
very understanding partner would very understandingly understand if you said I can't help with the child for the next 6 months because I have to write a book.
I think at the end, if it came out and it was a success, which obviously the odds are vastly against me, but if it came out and it was a success, I think she'd forgive me then. It's like those partners that, you know, like if someone gambles a lot and they're like, don't. Yeah, it's like there's people that gamble loads and their partner's like, stop gambling. Oh, you're gambling all that money away. And then one day they come home and went, I've won £1 million. And they're like, oh, brilliant. Yeah. And they take half £1 million, obviously. They don't mind then, do they? They don't mind then when they've got some old knicker in the old back pocket.
Yeah, I play the lottery like once every 6 months. Occasionally, just in the shop getting my, you know, whatever that evening supply of snacks is, and I'm there like I'm feeling lucky, and I'm normally feeling lucky just because I picked up a large packet of crisps. And I'm like, woohoo, crisps! But that feeling crisps. Obviously makes it to my bank balance, and I kind of go, I'm going to buy a lottery ticket because I think tomorrow I might just wake up a millionaire. It hasn't happened yet though.
That's I'm the exact opposite. When
all right.
I can't tell you what I just said. When I feel really depressed and I'm like, oh man, no work. I can't do it. Not another whole day of work. No, please no. And if I just happen to go to the shop and I go up to the cashier and the cashier's like, oh, I smile it. And I'm just looking at them like a bloodshot eyes. Yeah, here's this. And 3 lucky dips on the lottery now. Get me out of my hellhole. And they're laughing, thinking I'm joking. And then I grab them by the scruff of the neck going, what are you laughing at?
Loving it, man.
And start crying uncontrollably at the counter. But yeah, I do, and I'm feeling a bit down. I feel like, you know what really cheer me up? £10 million. That would cheer me up, no end. Nice big mansion.
We've talked about what we'd do if we won millions before, but we talked about that guy. You're talking about some guy that's got millions and squillions, but he's not happy.
The Minecraft creator, the guy that sold his studio to Microsoft for.
His name's Notch, isn't it? Is it Notch?
Yeah. Well, that's not his real name, but that's his Twitter handle.
How do people choose their, like, internet names? You know, because Notch is a bit of a random one. Because assuming it's not a translation or something, I mean, it might well be, because I don't think he's English, is he? But, like, let's just assume it's not. He has decided to name himself after, like, a little groove.
Yeah, I don't... Well, I think he's Swedish or from Norway or something like that. So maybe there that means something like...
Stud muffin.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Stud muffin.
Stud muffin. People have weird names online. I mean, it's interesting because you don't choose your own name. Like, my real name's Simon, and Spud's name, real name is Potato Face. And
why, Mum? Why did you call me Potato Face?
You don't choose your own name. So you just spend all your life going through whatever life you've been given by someone else. But on the internet, you have that chance to choose your own name. And people just, some people, you just get such a big random things. Some people go for a variation on their name. Like, we've got a guy who comes to my Twitch channel whose name is Henwa, which is just a variation of his original name. And then you've got people like me that kind of go, I'm going to identify myself by a small blob of fat from Doctor Who. That's how I wish to be known. And you've obviously named yourself after some food. And, you know, other people kind of just do, some people do sentences and things. I mean, psychologists, there needs to be like some sort of psychological course devoted to why do people choose the names that they do online.
I think the younger you are, the more the ones that are like jacked killer, big dick or something like that. It's like, and as soon as they hit like 19, they're like, oh no. Or probably a little bit older if it's a man. So, you know, 23. They're like, oh no, that's so embarrassing. Especially when they go for like job interviews and on the CV, it's like, oh, it says you're as loving stud killer muffin at hotmail.com. Is that right? And you're like, oh no, I'm not getting this job, am I? No, you're not.
No, you're not. I was playing Skyrim the other day, some guy called Douche something or other. Lover or something like that. So I had to just call him, you know, when I was replying to his questions, I had to be like, oh yeah, so this is the answer, douche. Every time I said it, I was like, I'm insulting him, but it's the name he has chosen for himself.
Self-loathing. It must be that. I've done Pale Man because I'm very pale complexion.
You've chosen a few times, haven't you? You've chosen a few times, haven't you?
Demon Llama.
Why change?
I think it's funny. I think humor mainly, mine's ones, but some people really take it seriously, like Fire Dragon, stuff like that.
You obviously change your name whenever you need to, you know, lose the X.
Yes, that's another one. That gets really quickly.
Demon, I forgot about old Demon Llama. I remember you being Pale Man, which always amused me because you're not, I know you're Scottish, but you're not actually that pale. Like, I know people that are far
pale. Very pale. I'm extremely pale.
You're not. I mean, occasionally you go very red as well.
We were getting changed in a locker room the other day, and you said, wow, I can see your veins because you're so pale. It's like, yeah. So I'm pretty pale. You can do that, yeah.
I don't remember saying that.
We're staring at each other's naked bodies.
Say that thinking and then regret of it. I did not say that.
You did?
Was this the one where I had my dingling out and you were getting really awkward and like staring at the cupboard and stuff?
Yeah, because, you know, I don't like male changing rooms.
Would you like to tell that story? Basically, the other day we were in a changing room. We were playing squash. We finished playing squash. We went to the changing room afterwards. I had a shower. And obviously, when one has a shower, you end up taking off your clothes, yada, yada, yada. And I never knew just how awkward Spud finds that. I mean, I'm never, you know, you're not particularly comfortable around other naked guys. You know, you look the other way and all that kind of stuff. And you don't kind of say things like, you know, nice nads, mate. But
hey, you've got a nice dick.
You've got a great dick.
Wow, is that, can I touch that? Is that real?
Can I?
That smells good.
Can I get a photo with that?
just next to your face on your shoulder. Sorry.
Just put it here. Just lay it there. And but you find it, you were really, really like awkward, really awkward, which I never knew about you.
You said that about how awkward I was. And I said, I think I've gone back in my memory, in my memory palace, and I think I've located the time in my life where that was. And it was very early school, and I think it was just middle school. So I must have been about 7 or something like that. Hmm. And we went swimming, and our head teacher took us out that day, and he all took us into the men's changing room. This doesn't get dirty, everyone. Don't worry. This isn't going to take a whoa. It's not one of those stories.
I better phone social tips.
And he, no. Anyway, and the locker was stuck. And he went up to this completely naked guy and started a conversation with him about the locker. And this guy was, it was like it was it was like a comedy show with hidden cameras. He had his one leg up and he had his towel under his crutch and he was drying himself and he was just, and he kept really turning really quickly. So it flopped extra every time he turned around. And as a young 7-year-old boy, I was like, oh my God, why is he doing this? Stop it. Surely this isn't allowed.
Is it with people that are overly comfortable with being naked and drying the undercarriage?
I don't
know. You know, they always seem to have this obsession of kind of like being naked and making sure the area under there is really very, very, very dry. You know, that whole towel thing that goes underneath it. It's like, really?
I mean, what do they do if they don't dry enough? Do they get out to their car after they leave the gym or the swimming pool and go, nope, that's not done. And they just pull down and continue to dry if it isn't done enough. It, like, just get over it, really. But I think you've got the exact right amount of awareness and comfortableness of being in that situation around other men. I'm aware that I'm far too like, whoa, no, put it away. I don't know where to look. What should I do? Oh, no. But some people are just, I don't know. I don't trust them. Anyone is just that
you don't trust them. What do you think they're going to do?
Just, why are they so comfortable? Why do they want me to see their penis? Why?
Maybe it's like people that are in the military, you know, and they like, or like in the scouts when they were younger or something like that. And they're just used to like, you know, because even in the army, you must have, like, you know, those big group showers and things, don't you? Or, like, in jail. Maybe it's prisoners in the military. Maybe if someone's really comfortable being naked, you know that they're either a criminal or they saved your country. So either salute or run.
But that's a pretty big contrast. It's like one is practically the opposite of the other. One's defending your rights as a civilian in your particular country, and the other one's probably broken your house and nicked something.
Mm. That's not good. That's racist towards criminals. There's lots of different types of criminal.
Racist towards criminals. Okay, they defrauded you, or they pickpocketed you, or they attacked you.
Or, you know, what else do people get arrested for these days? Did you know it's illegal to die in the House of Commons?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
What's the punishment?
I'm not sure what the punishment is. But I was doing a thing on parliamentary laws and bylaws the other day, and in school, I'm a teacher, as you guys didn't know, and it was talking about how there are a few laws around which are absurd, and they all come from some sort of historical precedent. You know, there was an issue at some point, and they made a law, but then you look back 300 years later, and it's absurd. And one of those laws is you can't die in the House of Commons.
I think another one about something like you couldn't wear wellies on a Tuesday. I can't remember what it was. It was in the paper. And it's a ridiculous old law that no one's ever enforced. Oh, what was it? No, I'm not going to remember this. I was laughing at it. Like, how come that hasn't been taken out yet? What's wrong with that? Oh, man, it's going to bug me now. I'm not going to look up silly laws that haven't been enforced on Google.
America has something. There are certain forms of, like, different sexual activities that are illegal in different states. Which to me, being in the UK, seems absolutely bizarre, because basically in the UK, something's either illegal or it's not. And there's minor things like traffic and parking and things like that. But basically the law is the law. So the idea that I could be on this side of a state and something's illegal and be on that side of the state and something's legal just seems absurd. But apparently America has it. Apparently there are certain, you know, naughty things you can do only in certain states. I read Webling on that. I keep clicking on those things that I shouldn't. You know, when you're on Facebook, and or some sort of web page, and it says, like, you know, 10 things, blah, 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 blah. And you know it's a stupid link. You know it's just an excuse to get you to click on lots of pages with adverts. But for some reason, they get you. Like, the other day, I clicked on what 10 Disney princesses would look like in real life or something like that. And I was like, that looks like a good way to spend the next 20 minutes. I'll read that. And then another one was 10 truly disturbing photos. And I clicked on it. And you know what? It was disturbing, and I regret it. But the clue was in the title. Why did I click on that, Spud? Why did I click?
I don't know. I did that today. I always click on, there was one like the 5 most damaging exercises, and I clicked on it, and I was like, right, cool.
Damaging exercises?
And it told you two, and I was like, oh, I thought this was going to be a trick. Even though I clicked on it, I fully expected it as some sort of, you can buy this magic pill that stops, you know, all that crap. And it told me two, so cardio is supposed to be really bad for you, which is a load of crap. And then I can't remember the other one. Yoga is supposed to be bad for you. And then the third one, it went, and if you want to find out the rest, all you have to do is 99999 to get all that rubbish. And I was like, nope, why did I click that? But no doubt I will click on it again.
£9.99 to not do exercises.
Yeah, he's going to send you like his whole big tip thing. People will do that. People somewhere, someone out there will be like, oh my God, I need to send this money immediately.
Yeah, just in case I haven't, in case those press ups I've been doing are killing me.
Every press up is closer to death.
Every press up takes me an inch closer to my own demise. Yes.
Yes.
I continue to click on those links, and I will forever continue to click on those links. This week I've been reading loads of Jeremy Corbyn stuff, the whole...
That's dominated the UK.
It has. It's a strange...
Did you see David Cameron's tweet that the Labour Party now threatens your security and your family's security and our country's security?
God, really?
And oh no, yeah, I was like that. And I think I shared it on Facebook and I said, what knob or something like that. But the replies to it were so funny. So this woman tweeted back a picture of her in a shed with like a straining or like a saucepan on her head in the shed going, am I safe now, Dave? And the other one said, one other guy just simply went, you okay, hun? Stuff like, you know, those vague Facebook messages. It was like he replied to it with like one of those. There was so many, he got so much, such abuse. It was just blatant scaremongering. It was funny though, but the response, most of the responses just, if he sent it himself, which I highly doubt he does that, he's probably got someone to do it for him. But, oh God, it was so funny. You need to go and find the tweet. Go to his Twitter page.
I think it's interesting having Corbyn. I mean, for the first time in British politics in a long time, we actually have a choice. I'm not sure I necessarily will like the choices. We'll have to see what the manifestos are. But, you know, it's actually, you know, I remember one of the big issues at the last few elections is lots of people going, what's the point? They're all the same.
Mm. Yeah, but now
you can't say that now.
No way. I was going through his because I didn't know much about him until he recently, you know, went up for the leadership. And I think I went for his 24 things that he stands for. It was like an article on BBC.
Yeah.
It's about half I agree with. And the other half, I'm like, oh, no.
But, oh, yeah, I think I might have seen that article. Yeah. I think for me, it was more extreme than that. It was half of them. I was like, that's, yes, a hero for my dream. Then the other half was like, what, dear God?
Yeah, that, and that's, it wasn't as bad as the BNP and the UKIP stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't that like where they say three good things and then the one bad thing they say makes up for. Doesn't matter how many good things you say, you've just ruined it for yourself. It doesn't matter. Literally, you could say, I will give every household in the UK £1 million if we decapitate someone of a different race. No, don't say that last bit.
We believe in getting rid of the deficit. We believe in improving everyone's lives. We believe in that. We believe in excellent public services and killing all the gays. What? Sorry. What was the last one? Say what?
Nothing. I just killing all the gays.
I'm not voting for you.
but his ones were like, oh, I don't know. I don't think I agree with that. And the other bits, yes, I agree with that. But then I get the sense with him that he means it. Where David Cameron says something, it doesn't matter what he says. I doubt his name is David Cameron. That's how much I do not trust that man. It doesn't matter what he says. If I met him and he was like, oh, you're right, how are you doing? I'd be like, yeah, I'm all right, you know. I don't know. Oh, what did you have for lunch? Or, you know, Subway sandwich or something. What did you have? Oh, I went to McDonald's. No, didn't you, lying git? Why don't you tell me the truth?
To be cool. You're just saying it to be cool.
Just everything. I know. But at least I believe Corbyn and what he says. I don't necessarily agree with all the bits, but.
Yeah, no. But I believe he believes what he believes in.
Yes, which is fine. Someone with some conviction.
It's interesting / scary to see how many of the Labour Party, as in his own party, don't want anything to do with him. And it confuses me to an extent because Jeremy Corbyn actually represents what Labour always was traditionally. And I don't mean, you know, I'm talking maybe like 20, 30 years ago, but he is a left winger. And Labour is supposed to be the left wing party. And you've basically got loads of Labour politicians now going, don't agree with that. And it's like, what? Why are you in this party? You know, it really kind of hard to me highlights. I'm not saying I disagree with him because I think it is important. I think I'm more moderate than he is. But to me, it very much kind of says to me, are you sure you guys joined the right party? You know, or did you just want to be an MP?
They just wanted a career. And, oh, well, that position's filled over in the Tories. And I really want that position. So I think I'll join the Labour Party. And that goes exactly what you were saying before. They were essentially the same parties saying the same things. But both saying that the working class you know, and they're going to help do this. They're both exactly the same things. But the Tory would never, ever say some of the stuff he said in the last couple of days. Brilliant. I think I heard a radio interview, and the guy, the guy for benefits and working taxes and all that kind of stuff. Shadow something, I can't remember. Anyway, he was saying, he just blatantly said, yes, we'll spend more money on benefits. And the president was like, but we're trying to lower that. And he goes, no, the Tories are trying to lower that. We would put that up and lower something else to make up for that. And the presenter was like flabbergasted that he was admitting that on like radio. And it's like, well, good, because then you've got a choice now. You've got a choice. Do you want this or do you want that? That's a choice. Imagine he went into like a restaurant and we're like, oh, you know, so looking through the menu and everything was steak. Everything, even the drink was steak. It'd be, politics drives me crazy.
I watched some silly interviews with Kevin Nash and Jim Cornette the other day. Sorry to move the topic to wrestling. I thought it was a really good one. It's this... I don't know what the interviewer's name is. Interviewer's names are, because it seems to be one of those things on YouTube where whoever initially uploaded it or whichever program it was initially on has just been ripped off by everyone, and lots of people have now uploaded the program. So I've got no idea what the program was and who did the present. But there's this guy that wears a suit, middle, you know, 35-ish, 40. He's clearly very well prepared and asks some good questions, but then lets the guys kind of talk. But he kind of asks them kind of controversial questions and then just lets them talk and tell stories, which is, I think, been really nice interviews. And I watched a lot of his Jim Cornette and Kevin Nash stuff, and it's interesting stuff, man. Kevin Nash was talking about the... I've completely forgotten what he was talking about. That's amazing. He was talking about... Hang on, awkward moment.
Oh, awkward, he's forgotten.
Yeah, I have forgotten. It was something to do with Brett.
Was it about...
Yes, it was Brett. It was. Do you remember Undertaker Diesel at WrestleMania 12, 13?
Yes.
And do you remember leading up to that match, they both faced Bret Hart for the title? And
yeah,
they both cost each other the title? I think it was when Undertaker had that face mask on and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the story goes... This is Kevin Nash telling the story. They all went out for a meal, including Brett, including whoever else was booking it and type stuff. And they were talking about the cage match, and that there was a cage match with Diesel, which is Kevin Nash, versus The Undertaker. No, sorry, Diesel versus Brett for the title. And Diesel was supposed to hit the jackknife, have the match won, and then Undertaker comes up and pulls Diesel through the canvas, and that's it. And then that's the end of the match. So Diesel won the match, but he was prevented from winning it by The Undertaker. And apparently Bret Hart refused to take the powerbomb. He refused to take the jackknife. He said, no, it makes me look too weak. It'll damage me as a character. I've already looked like I was beaten once against The Undertaker. And apparently, and Kevin Nash was saying it was one of the few times he ever heard The Undertaker get, like, aggressive towards another wrestler. Because apparently, which is weird, because I've heard some of the opposites and things like that. But, you know, I don't read too much backstage politics. But, apparently it was one of the few times The Undertaker's really been quite aggressive. Apparently he just turned around to Bret and went, for F's sake, Bret, you're not everything. Is about you. This is not about your match. This is about our match. And I went back and watched the match. And you know what? Bret doesn't take the powerball. It's a really bizarre finish. Diesel just kind of crawls towards the ropes, and halfway The Undertaker pops out of the floor.
He spoke about that on Stone Cold's podcast as well.
Oh, did he?
He's exactly the same thing. They went out for dinner. And he was like, but why? And he was like, oh, I think he said then he was prepared to kick out of it and then set him up for a second one. And then he comes up, and then his argument was, well, hang on, then that makes my move look crap.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to go in a match with The Undertaker with people thinking everyone can kick out my move. So they come to that terrible agreement. And that's when he was getting really sick. I think I'm not sure if he knew he was going out the door, but he was very close to that time, wasn't it? Mm. Shortly afterwards, I think. But, Did you hear about the crap dinner story? Did he tell that one?
No, tell me the crap dinner story.
The crap dinner story. So it was the click era in wrestling.
Yeah.
And they, who was it? I think it was the Body Donnas were really like getting on their nerves for some bizarre reason.
Oh, this
and,
isn't an actual crap dinner, a dinner of crap.
Oh. Oh,
oh no.
So anyway, so they were having a match. They kept getting in their faces about stuff and confronting them about the fact that they were running things, and that they weren't going to have that. And I think Nash did give the sense that they were being douchebags. So they were having a match, and they told X-Pac or 1-2-3 Kid or Sean Walton,
whatever he's known as these days.
Ah, oh, my bum. That guy.
which is another story for another
which
time.
Is another story for a different time. They got him to like, they had all these pre-packed meals that would then go with them onto the next location, which they would eat in the hotel room that night after their matches. It was like a big tour of Europe or something. So they got X-Pac to jump over the gate, find these meals, empty it out, take a cack in their container, the Tupperware container thing that was all freshly made for them, put the chicken back on top to hide the turd, and then put it all back and stuff like that. And, yes, they're all in the hotel room and they just heard this, oh my God. They knew it was them later that night and they were screaming, oh, who did this? Oh my God. And I think they wanted to do it to Brett as well, but someone said, no, better not do it to Brett. But apparently it's one of the body doctors. I think it was Sonny. Sonny was running up and down going, so I just took a crap in my meal and all this other stuff. And they were laughing and they were banging on the door going, I know it's something to do with you guys. And they were all on the other side of the door snickering away. Oh, that's crazy wrestling stories. I do enjoy it. Stone Cold podcast. I do recommend that for your crazy wrestling stories. He does get the best stories out of these guys. It's well funny.
I think he's one of the boys. This was, they're kind of open up, do more than they would do others.
Exactly.
I watched the Jim Cornette one. I watched was Jim talking about the infamous Montreal Screwdrop, and he was talking about, it was interesting because he didn't talk much about the night itself, because he was there on the, apparently at the time he was in the WWF as a, what's the backstage people that just kind of keep things running smoothly,
road agents.
Yeah,
road.
Yeah, he was a road agent or something like that, and he. The only thing he kind of said about the night was he saw that something was about to go down. He was suspicious what was about to go down, because it was always his job to kind of deal with any issues that arose when the screwdriver actually happened. You know, the bell rang, and he instantly kind of knew what had happened. He was like, right, cool, I'm going then. So he just said he left the building as humanely possible because he knew it was all going to go down and he'd have to deal with it. So he was just like, I'm going to get out of here. But he was talking about how it was just ridiculous on Vince's part to let himself get into that situation in the first place. And he was kind of talking about how, why would you let your world champion sign with another company? Like, well, letting someone sign with another company, fine. Having a world champion, fine. But don't let your world champion sign with another company and then go, oh God, how are we actually going to get the title off him? And, he was basically kind of mocking everyone. He was kind of like, well, Bret Hart refusing to lose in Canada in a fixed sport is just absurd, and Vince not taking the title off him was just absurd, and the fact that they were refusing, you know, there were so many kind of scenarios that kind of played out and every scenario didn't work for some reason. It was just all very, 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 very bizarre. But it's a good interview. It's nice hearing these kind of backstage people telling their perspective of things, and obviously everyone's biased, but it's good fun.
Hey, I don't know what to make of the whole situation. Apparently Brett offered to do the job the next night clean, but he just didn't want to lose in Canada. But then by then he would already be out of contract. So he didn't even have to turn up to the building that night that he promised he would. So it was all this case of promises and handshakes and I'm going to trust you, when he didn't really trust him.
Why would he still be champion? Like, why would Vince keep someone? I mean, that'd be the equivalent these days of, you know, like, I mean, Seth, saying to Seth Rollins, all right, fine. Okay. So you're going to go to TNA. We'll take the title off you in a month or two then.
Exactly.
You get it off.
But and that wasn't the first time. I think Alondra Blaze, her contract ended, and she agreed to like lose the title the following month after her contract. But then, obviously, the next night on Raw, the day after her contract ran out, she was on Nitro putting the WWE title, women's title, in the bin on live television. After that happened, he still let it happen again. But then again, he's a billionaire and we're not.
Yeah, he's
so,
a billionaire, we're not. Yeah. Yeah, so at the end of the day, whatever argument we kind of put together,
he could just throw $100 bills at our face and say, sorry, I can't hear what you're saying. You've got too much money in your face. Oh, sorry about that. I'm like, crap. So,
billionaires, Steve Jobs, obviously he's less of a billionaire now because he's dead, but like...
yes.
He's... we're now on, I was reading about this, the fifth Steve Jobs autobiography film now.
I haven't seen any of them. Did it even get released?
I haven't seen any of them either, but there's a bit, like, I knew there was one with Ashton Kutcher because everyone
didn't that flop and go straight to DVD or something?
It didn't do well for some reason, but I think the reviews were reasonable, but I can't remember. And then they've just done another one with, was it Steve? We talked about him last week. Michael
Fassbender.
Yeah, which is very strange. And apparently, then that's going to come as well. And it's like, I don't get the obsession with making biographies about Steve Jobs.
Because he turned Apple around, I suppose, and they're ridiculously successful now.
You're not going to get...
I don't know.
Are we going to get, like, you know, Richard Branson the movie? Are we going to get Alan Sugar the miniseries? Are we going to get Donald Trump the... Well, we probably will get Donald Trump one, but
why Jobs? Probably. A big American company, everyone loves Apple. I mean, you're asking the wrong guy because I don't get the whole Apple fascination that people seem obsessed with it and go out of their way and you spend so much money on the whole product. So maybe they're it's just a piggyback on that. I'm just like, whatever. And I read an article once that this is crazy theories. I don't believe this for a second at all, just in case anyone out there thinks I'm nuts. Apparently,
I'm sure, right, the Naked Changing Room story will.
Apple's owned by the devil. The apple symbolizes the apple from the Garden of Eden, and it's cult and it brainwashes people, and that's why everyone loves it so much. It's just some people. I mean, was someone, why are apples so successful? Is it all the products? Oh, they got a nice tablet. Maybe the price point's a bit high. Oh, no, it's the devil. That's it. Oh, figured it out. There you go. It's the devil.
Well, the whole thing about some of my students, I think last year, were trying to persuade me. What is some sort of, is it like a devil organization or like a Catholic organization or something? God, there's some organization that lots of famous people are supposed to belong to, like Beyonce and
the Illuminati.
That's it. Yes, that's it. There's supposed to be this massive conspiracy across the world that there's a whole bunch of famous people that are all in on it, whatever it is.
Yeah, the secret, the new world order, all that stuff. Not the cool one with the...
Everything. And part... I mean, if Beyonce and Jay-Z are actually in it, then obviously part of controlling the world was, you know, crazy enough.
We control the world with a catchy tune.
With a catchy goddamn tune. I bet it was... But, you know, there was probably some, like, you know, Freemason, you know, 70 years ago that actually wrote the melody for Halo, but they've been saving it ever since for the right world domination moment.
So when they're around, remember the episode of The Simpsons when they're like the stonecutters or something?
Yeah.
The Illuminati meetings will be much better because they got Beyonce and Jay-Z to write all their songs. So it'll be much, much, much better than those ones. Even though that song was good. We do.
Then of course, beat that, Jay-Z. There's Scientology as well. Although Scientology actually exists as opposed to the Illuminati, which I'm fair. I mean, maybe not. Maybe the Illuminati are watching this right now and go, our plan is working. He's mocking belief in us. Secretly,
well, if you get assassinated overnight, then I should get worried. Get a phone call going. Simon's been shot in his bed while he was asleep. What? No. And I will mourn your passing as well. But at the same time,
thank you for your sympathy. There's a new Scientology documentary coming out, if it's not out already, which is by Louis Theroux, which I'm really looking forward to.
Oh, is this the one that they are following him around at the same time?
I don't know if they do that to him, but they've done that in the past.
Yeah, they've done that to other people as well.
BBC made a documentary. It ended up being called Scientology and Me, because he started just making a documentary on Scientology. And then he followed them, they followed him, and the whole documentary just ended up being about his interaction with them. So they actually then renamed the whole documentary and called it Scientology and Me. Because they at the end of it, the documentary guy said, so I don't really know much about Scientology and what they believe, but this is what happened when I met them.
It was a really cool episode of South Park that summed it up really quickly and in typical South Park fashion and just completely ripped it to shreds, and it was very, very funny.
What was their summary of it?
Oh, there was an alien overlord thousands of years ago, and he took all his people. For any Scientologists out there, sorry if I'm getting this wrong, and I haven't paid for this information. This is all Trey Parker and the other guy's fault. So he took his whole race and he dropped them in Earth's volcanoes, and then their spirits came out of the aliens and bonded with prime, early man.
Obviously.
And that's what our souls are. Our souls are alien souls. So far, I'm on board with it.
More far-fetched than, say, Hinduism.
Or say anything. I mean, I always laugh when one religion laughs at another religion, because if you stand on the outside of it, and go, All right, yeah. So an alien overlord dropped some aliens into a volcano, and their spirits bonded with with people. Oh yeah, that's crazy. And you got
you believe when you die, you come back as a chicken. Yeah.
And you believe
eat a man's flesh every Sunday. Oh.
You believe in a talking snake and a talking donkey. And you could do it all day, but, you know, trying to be respectful on Spud Anticast. So we probably shouldn't go
all through all the websites because we lose all the viewers and again, I get shot in the middle of the night.
We have to do all of them now. I can't remember anything. I think we covered most of them in that big rant there. But Scientology does sound cool. I mean, you know, as an episode of South Park, it was really entertaining.
I'm looking forward to Louis Theroux doing it because I don't know if you're much of a Louis fan, but I think you've watched Louis stuff, haven't you?
I've watched one. I've watched the one with He Who Shall Not Be Named. Not Voldemort, Jimmy Savile.
Yes. Well, Louis Theroux is a British documentary maker, and in recent years he's gone on to look at some quite difficult topics. But one he does many things well. And one thing I particularly like about him, he seems to kind of play this slightly naive but friendly persona when he interviews people. And it might be his real personality or an extension of his personality, but he just kind of chats to people and asks slightly naive questions in a kind of likable way. And as an interview style, it's actually genius because the people that are in his interviewing obviously like him. They end up, you know, he asks them about their football teams and, you know, or whatever it happens to be. And then slowly throws in little questions about whichever kind of horrific belief they have to have. And then because he keeps the kind of naive persona up, he kind of goes, so what about this? And then what about that? And how does that make you feel? And he somehow manages to keep them on side all the time while actually getting them to reveal possibly more than they might otherwise. And it's a really, really nice interviewing style. He interviewed one of my favorite ones of him is the America's Most Hated Family. He interviewed the Phelps family.
The ones with all the kids.
Yes.
Yes.
He uses the same technique there, and he gets them. They open up to him and they talk about their beliefs. I mean, and it's, the stuff they say is horrific, but it's really interesting the way he gets them to talk. And the only person he couldn't get to talk, which is also interesting to see, was the main guy who died a couple of years ago now. Fred Phelps, like the grandfather, like he just had no time for Louis. I think Louis went up and asked him an inane question, and he just kind of looked at him and basically told him to get out, you know, because he was wasting his time. And you could see Louis was a bit like, oh, my powers.
my powers are not working. He's immune. Cool superpowers to make anyone say anything.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this thing? Oh, I think, oh, damn. You mentioned Donald Trump. And obviously, he's no longer on Celebrity Apprentice in America.
Yes.
And they've got a new presenter. And I would like to know why the world is so unfair that we've got Alan Sugar and America have Arnie. It's not fair. I want Arnie on Britain's Apprentice.
You want Arnie? I mean...
Yes! He's funny!
But he hasn't... I mean, surely the prerequisite for being the boss on The Apprentice would be to be a successful businessman.
Well, he's a success anyway. I mean, minimum, you could call him a success. Maybe not a businessman, but a success.
He's a success. I'll give him success. And he's been a governor and things. I mean, he's got a very interesting set of credentials, but he's not a businessman.
But just ignore that bit. It's Arnie. I mean, if instead of using all the other silly, you're fired. That's Alan Sugar's one. I've never seen a Donald Trump one. But if he just uses all these catchphrases.
You're fired.
And then someone else asks him what happened to that guy. Yeah, he had to split. And, you know, just all the classic catchphrases.
You want me back.
Instead of saying get fired, he could go, get to the chopper. And there's a chopper outside waiting to take the loser away. Oh, man, the possibilities are just endless.
I'm not sure about Arnie and The Apprentice. I mean, not that I've watched The Apprentice much, but I do know that even in the UK, The Apprentice is still huge. Like, I know it takes over whenever it's on, like, a good, like, fifth of the staff. It's all they talk about in the staff. Did you see it? Did you see what they did? Oh, I hate that person. Oh, I like that person. Oh, I hate this. Oh, he's got to go. He's terrible, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's properly, like, you know, addicting. I mean, as long as it doesn't take the place of the Great British Bake Off, that's my thing.
Oh, God. God forbid that was to happen.
Yeah.
This weekend, talking to telly, Doctor Who's back.
Yes.
Yeah, so obviously me and Addy are big Doctor Who nerds. We love a bit of Doctor Who.
What would you like from the new series?
Oh, I was just about to ask you that. Cool. Well, did you see the prequel to the series that got released the other day?
He meets that. I can't remember what the lady's names are, but he meets that lady.
It's the one
in
from the Night of the Doctor when he regenerated from Paul McGann's Doctor into William Hurt's Doctor.
And those characters apparently have been in Doctor Who before.
Previously, yeah. I just want good. I mean, apparently there's lots of two-parters in this series, which is going to be cool because I like that. It gives a bit more air to things.
I think it's because they consciously, I read something that said they consciously chose not to in previous series. Like it wasn't just like it didn't happen. They said, we're not going to have two-parters. Now they've gone, we are going to have two-parters. I want to know
I think mixes are good, personally. But
I think mixes are good. I don't really get why they got rid of them. And I'm not entirely sure why they brought them back. No, not that I object to them being there. More like what's the logic each time?
Yeah, I'm not doing it. But it's kind of spoilers because I don't know if I'm right or I'm wrong because I don't know what really the prequel means.
Spoilers,
but
you know, I hung up on
well, I don't know anything. This is theories more than spoilers. Okay, but you know how in previous series there's been the whole forthcoming death of the Doctor, and they've done it twice now. So they've done it with Tennant's Doctor and Smith's Doctor, where it's like he was heading towards his death, if not his regeneration. It has that flavour on it again, and it's like how many times can you use the story? Because it's like the, you know, oh, you have to go and see him. You know who they're talking about. You have to give that to them. You know who to give this to. And it's just got this sense of that he can't run away from something. So I don't want them to do that story again. Unless they're going to do it so good that I don't care. That's fine.
The problem with those stories, I didn't actually get the same thing from the trailer. I got the fact that he was off to do a mission. I didn't get that there was no hint of my time is ending, the drums, blah, blah, blah. But the problem in general with heading towards their end stories is it's a TV program and you know that the Doctor is not going to die. And even if you also know when the actor's going to leave, when the actor's not going to leave, especially these days. I mean, there was the surprise with Eccleston, but that was 10 years ago. And now, you know, it's happening I mean, don't get me wrong. Maybe they're going to shock the absolute bejesus out of us and just get a new Doctor Who. But I mean, but you know what I mean? For me, there's not really any tension in that plot line because.
No, it's like an event for them to change the Doctor now, as well as what you're saying. Yeah. It's like any series. We know it's going to keep going on. It's not like a Walking Dead where any main character could die at any time and normally does. And you're like, no, that's my favorite character. But you know, the show will go on, but you don't know that character's going to die. But if the Doctor was to die, then that'd be quite pointless unless somehow Clara had discovered how to.
It was more effective with Clara. I mean, in the last series, you know, the will Clara go? And, I mean, I was convinced she was gone. And then I thought she was gone in the Christmas episode. And then all of a sudden she came back. So they could do it more. The character arcs are often more a bit more the character is going to die arcs I think are more effective with the partner with the companions because they actually can die.
Yeah, I agree. But it's to answer your original question, I want no more silliness between them. I want them to have just a proper doctor companion relationship and get into some good adventures and start. You know what I mean?
What do you mean by silliness?
Well, it's not silliness because I enjoyed it at the time, but it seems like it went on for a whole series of their dynamic and is she going to get used to the new doctor and all that kind of stuff. And then, but it seemed to have come to the end of that at the Christmas special at the end of that. Spoilers for anyone who hasn't watched that. You know, she's made a decision now and let's get on with some silly.
I agree, but I think they will because I think it was just something new. Because if you remember when Eccleston became Tennant.
Mm.
Rose was unsure for an episode.
And yeah, one episode and one Red Nose Day special.
You know, Tennant saved the world, flashed her a grin, looked cute, and she went, all right, then let's go, off we go. And it was basically never mentioned again. And then Tennant to Smith didn't take any companions with him. So I don't think there's anything wrong. I think it's actually quite a nice idea having a companion that kind of sticks around, but at the same time, questions, you know, you've changed, you're not the same person. The thing I don't like about the Doctor companion thing, and they did this with Amy and Rory as well, I don't like the whole they keep popping home thing.
Clara
was a school teacher and he kept kind of picking her up in the cupboard. And there was that bit where Amy and Rory kind of lived at home, if you remember, and then the Doctor would kind of pick him up
couple
like
episodes
once in 6 months. And
I like that because it's I like the contrast between the episodes. So obviously, you know, if they're in the Wild West or Victorian London in one day, and then they go to 1940s New York or something, and then they pop down to modern day England, it's just that nice contrast, you know. And then the next episode, they could shoot off to the year 5000 or something. Sounds like a weird busted song. But yeah, I like the contrast of that, and it kind of grounds it a bit. So I like my sci-fi when it does when it is grounded in a little bit. Realistic.
I like the grounding. Yeah. I like the grounding in reality. But I'm going to just like, if you compare it with Rose and Martha, Rose and Martha lived on, while they were companions, they lived on the TARDIS, didn't they? And
yeah, there was a couple of episodes
to get clothes or to visit the mum or, you know, you got to come, the Cybermen are here, blah, blah, blah. You know, they popped back, but their lives were on the TARDIS, and the Doctor and the companion, they were the unit. And when they left, it was like a big, big thing. But I kind of get the impression with Amy and Rory. I think that's it. I think it's then the leaving means less. Because when Amy and Rory, by the end, were kind of like, oh, yeah, kind of see you in 6 weeks and stuff, you kind of got the impression of whether they carried on with the Doctor or didn't carry on with the Doctor. It didn't really matter so much. And the same with Clara, with the whole, like, thing with Danny Pink and becoming a teacher. Like, she has a life away from the TARDIS, whereas Rose and Martha and Donna, when they joined the TARDIS, that became their lives, you know?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, the school teachery thing doesn't do it. I do like when she pops home, but her home life's so ambiguous. I still don't really quite know what the setup is there with all her family and stuff.
She's got a weird granny, and that seems to be her home life. I mean, you don't have to get to know every companion's home life, but the companion's home lives have been very affected with Donna and with Rose, especially. Their home lives were really, I mean, come on, Wilf.
Yeah.
I mean, they got an entire regeneration out of Wilf.
Exactly. And Rose's mum always made me laugh. She was crazy.
Do you know Wilf wasn't actually supposed to be on the show?
No, I didn't.
It was supposed to be. If you know the first one when Donna, the runaway bride?
Yes.
She's getting married and she's got a mum and she's got a dad. She actually has a dad in that episode. He either doesn't have any lines or he doesn't say much.
And he's got big thick glasses, I think. I remember. Yeah, I think I know the guy you're talking about.
Actor, I think this is right. I might get yelled at by the posse here if I'm wrong. The actor in real life died, and so they then had to rethink, you know, what they were going to do. You know, are we just going to replace the actor, yada yada yada? And they decided to use Wilf because he was already in the show, and they liked the actor, they liked the character, and then tied him in as a Donna relative because he wasn't in The Runaway Bride. You didn't know he was a relative.
Wasn't he at a newsstand in The Runaway Bride? He was like just a random side part.
I thought he was newsstand in the Titanic episode.
Ah, right. I get confused with things crashing towards Earth for Christmas specials there.
Something else graduated. So Wilf wasn't, as far as I understand it, Wilf
they teleported away right in front of him.
Well, we need to patch something in, and they decided to use a character they already had, which was brilliant because Wilf, the actor that plays it, Cribbins, did it fantastically. Wilf himself was awesome, and it was so popular that they could use him to regenerate Tennant and have, you know, who can kill the Doctor and have us still like him afterwards. Okay, fine, Wilf, go on then.
have you heard about the Christmas special?
I have, but I don't want to talk about it.
Oh man, I'm so excited. Have you heard about it though? I'm not going to talk about it more than just say.
I've heard that there's a returning character.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Why not?
Because I like the Doctors to have eras.
Oh no, see, I'm the exact opposite. I love it when a character meets a new Doctor. I so wanted Jack to meet Matt Smith's Doctor. Oh my God, I so wanted it. So badly. I would have given one of the objects from a desk in front of me. Probably no limbs, not that desperate, but just, you know, just it would have been so funny. I mean, it was really cool seeing Jack when he met David Tennant's Doctor after they, you know, went to the end of time or whatever. That was cool. Just the little conversations they had. Oh, man.
I mean, yes and no. I don't know. I think when they got to the end of Tennant, they had all those goodbyes for those characters, you know, that, you know, the big extended goodbye.
Mm.
In that episode, you weren't actually only saying goodbye to Tennant. You were saying goodbye to Tennant's era.
Yeah.
I think very much River was, although she initially started with Tennant, River is associated with Matt Smith's era, isn't she?
But also, what you have to remember is that the writer left as well, Russell T. Davis. Is that right? Yeah, I think that's his name. Where this is still Moffat. There's two Doctors under Moffat.
That's true.
And that's probably why Jack, even though Jack was created by Moffat as well, Jack first met Eccleston and then met Tennant. That's probably why, possibly, he hasn't done that, because that was considered part of his era.
But what story is there left to tell with River? I mean, they've completed her arc, haven't they? Like, we've now seen her from beginning to end.
Yeah, but they haven't. Have they done everything? You know, all the episodes where she goes through her diary and she talks about, have we done this? Have we done that? Has she got to everything they've mentioned?
Probably not, but I would assume
they've done two. They've done the crashing of the. I don't know. You don't know. Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Spoilers. Spoilers, honey. Ooh. But I'm looking forward to it, and I think you're a fool, and it's going to be awesome. And I want the Doctor act all awkward with lots of sexual tension.
I know a lot of people are really looking forward to it. I think for me, she's not my favourite character, but I know for a lot of people, she's like, you know, she is one of the greatest characters in Doctor history. So I'll be happily outvoted on this one.
And that's three Doctors she's met. So I think that's like the record for any companion, like modern day companion. Sarah Jane met Matt Smith and David Tennant.
And Jack met Bowie and Fourth Doctor. She's met four.
I mean, of modern era, not of the classics. Sorry, if you want to count the classics, no. But since the modern era, we've had just Jack with two, Sarah Jane with two. I think that's it. Am I wrong? Martha didn't meet Eccleston, no. Yeah,
Rose, so I'm pretty sure. Rose met both because she travelled with him.
Yeah, so that's Rose two, Clara two,
and Rose, but this is three. Rose kind of three because 50th special.
Yeah, that wasn't Rose though. That was the
come on that now. One. Say, no, that wasn't actually Rose. It was
a computer. Damn it. So, can I talk about Assassin's Creed quickly? Since
you can, I have nothing to say about Assassin's Creed.
We don't, but I want to moan and bitch about this because, oh man, right. So, Assassin's Creed. I've played every single Assassin's Creed game and I've had my highs and lows, and recently I've had enough. The last game, Unity, really killed it off for me. As I've said to you, it was like walking around in a big populated France, and it was just too much, and it was too much to do, and it was too boring. Somehow they managed to get both of those ticks. How do you do that? Anyway, I said, that's it. I finished with the series. I'm not spending, you know, £40 a year.
I remember the tale, and then the next one came out was set in London, and you were like,
Victorian London. And I said to you, brilliant. Okay, I'm going to give it one more go, because I've been waiting for this one since like two. And hopefully going to see Jack the Ripper. Oh, you're going to do some Victorian London detective work and catch Jack the Ripper. Maybe Jack the Ripper is part of the Templars or something crazy like that. Jack the Ripper is DLC. What a load of crap. God damn it. What the hell? It got announced like the other day, or it might have been yesterday. It could have been at the Tokyo Game Show that just happened. But what? Everyone, surely, the first two thoughts I had was, cool, I'm going to like climb up Big Ben and St. Paul's Cathedral or something, number one. Number two, I want to find Jack the Ripper. Those are the top two things I thought of when I heard about it being in this day and age. And then three was, you know, other things like gameplay. But it was just the thing where it was set. It was like, wow, cool. You know, what are they doing? Ah, oh, that's such a douchey move, man. I was so pissed off. So I know you don't like it, but I just had to get off my chest.
How much is the DLC?
Oh, it's going to be something silly. It's going to be like, oh, which leads on to another quick thing. But it's going to be at least £10 for the single bit, or they're going to do a season pass for £40. So moving on really quickly because we're running out of time. It got announced today. It wasn't today. I can't even remember the game. Nope, it's gone out of my head. Something got announced and there was loads of DLC and it was like, yeah, that's a bargain. But everyone loves that game. Ah, oh, damn it. I didn't write it down. Should have written it down. My old brain's just withering away and not working anymore. Oh, man, what was it? It was the contrast, though. It was because Batman Arkham Knight, they kind of said, here's a season pass before the game got released. And everyone was like, what the hell? The game's not even out. What do you think you're doing? And then, oh, God damn it. What was it? It wasn't Witcher. Oh, man, I'm so annoyed. If something just said, anyway, go on. You carry it forward because I've completely forgot.
I have a charity walk on Friday for charity.
Charity walks are normally for charity, yeah.
Shut up. And each form has voted for like an outfit to wear, like fancy dress and stuff. And one form's doing onesies, which obviously I vetoed on the principle that I'm so big that I wouldn't be able to wear one onesie. I'd probably have to wear like two onesies, and then that's wearing a twosie, and that just sounds like you're wearing a poo. and one form's wearing like superheroes and stuff. My form voted for crazy hair.
Crazy hair?
Crazy hair. And I haven't got any hair.
Yeah, I was just about to bring up that little problem.
So what's happened now is that other members of staff are kind of like attacking me with the offers of wigs.
Wigs, I was going to say that.
Yeah. So I've had an offer of a pink wig. I've had an offer of a clown wig. And I've had an offer of a black man afro wig.
Oh, God, I was going to go pink wig, but then you said black man afro wig.
No, I can't wear the black man afro wig.
Well, just any afro. It doesn't have to be a black man's afro.
Well, who else has an afro? I mean, the clues
curly men, white man afros with curly hair. You could get pretty big hair. Will Ferrell has really big hair when he lets it grow.
White man afros are. I think you look at them going, how? What in your genes has done that?
It's some sort of weird 80s gene where it's just curled up.
In the 1980s has. Like, you seem to have been born with a perm.
So what are you going to do?
I think I'm wearing the pink wig.
The pig? Is it pig. A pig? Pink, even? Is it like a sticky-uppy bun, or is it
floating? I haven't long? Seen it yet. What concerns me is I asked my form today, I said, like, hands up, who sorted out your crazy hair? And, like, two or three of them put their hands up. So I've just got a little bit concerned that I'm actually just walking around with a completely normal-looking form wearing a pink wig.
just everyone. No one else has brought anything.
No one else has brought anything. They're just me going, like, oh, hi, I'm wearing pink.
Brilliant. Well done.
Yeah. I mean, at least they'd see me in a crowd, but people always see me in a crowd. I'm 6 foot and, well, that's the width.
of your body. Whoa.
My God. Those flashbacks to James Ingram's are getting haunting you, aren't they?
That's why. Why did you show me it? No, you didn't. I remember the game.
After our little discussion the other day, I had a go at All Star Pro Wrestling 3.
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it popping up.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
I did Vader versus Misawa, and he kicked the absolute hell out of me. And you know, in that game, they actually do kick the absolute hell out of you.
Who are you?
Misawa.
Oh, yeah, Vader. Oh, I don't want
to mess with. I don't know if you remember, Vader actually has a move which is a punch combination. Mm. And in All-Star Pro Wrestling, if you remember, sometimes the combination will just keep going indefinitely, like they're just going to get trapped in it or something like that. And he did that, like, really early on in the game. He hits some stupid clothesline, some stupid punch, ram into the corner, smash, 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 smash. And you hit the first, and you're just wincing through the whole thing. And then, my character just went, like, on the floor. And you know what he followed up with? The freaking Vader bomb off the top right.
Oh, no! So,
so it was like, oh.
So it was more or less a real Vader match then.
Yeah, it's basically a real Vader match. Yeah, and I kind of came back a little bit, and then he crushed me. So yeah, that's a real Vader match.
You still enjoying it? Has it aged well?
Yeah, it has actually. I mean, it's still all the flaws that were there at the very beginning are still there. Like the power ups are a bit unusual, and the career mode doesn't make any sense, and so it's exactly the same game it was. But yeah, no, I think it has aged well. I would still say the striking is better than the current crop of wrestling game.
Mm.
Grappling less so. The rush and groggy system definitely not. But the actual strike fights are still fantastic.
Those are one of the best things about.
Do you remember when you could hit, like, if both of you drop kicked at the same time? The drop kick would connect. Both of you would connect in midair. You'd both land on the floor. You'd both try and stand up, and then you'd both fall over.
Yeah, you'd both get on one knee and just fall backwards. Yeah, I remember that. They don't do enough double knockouts in wrestling games. Damn it.
The new ones kind of has it, though, doesn't it? You do a super if you're really.
Oh yeah, sometimes if you're both really knackered, you're both on the floor and one crawls over to the other. Yeah. If it's not the same as the double drop kick or the double clothesline.
There was a discussed one which I did. I think I did Liger versus someone. And the match was pretty close, and the guy ran at me and sort of tried to do some sort of dropkick thing at the same time as I did a lariat, and it ended up looking like one of those Rikishi cells. Mm. You know when he gets caught with the lariat in midair and kind of like spins in midair and then lands. It was one of those ones where you're going to go afterwards. You go, oh my God.
Cool. I do love a good wrestling game. The new one looks quite cool as well. I might be getting a little bit hyped up for that. Come on. I tried to fight against it, but it didn't work. Damn it.
There goes your sleep for the next.
Yeah. October. That's more or less October out the window.
Well, that brings us to the end of Spud Alley.
Yes, we've waffled through 60 glorious minutes.
60 glorious, that's a good name for a podcast.
60 glorious minutes.
60 glorious minutes.
Well, we can name this episode that if you want. Yes, good. Go on, that's all it. I don't have to engage my brain.
Yep,
good.
Yep. Spud likes to have his episode titles.
I do. I like them. I'm really proud of my list of titles. Well, people probably looking at it and think, what does that mean? I have no idea, but
well, this has been 60 glorious minutes. Thank you for watching, everyone. If you're watching